Still alive to be reading this, if you think about it. If the warnings presented to us with such earnest certainty by scientists, the environmentalists, astronomers, astrologers, doom merchants, Nostradamusals and religious nuts had come true, we'd just be a collection of atoms spread over an area previously occupied by planet Earth. Yet we've survived, despite being told. Number one, the Millennium Bug was going to mash up our digital world, at least send us into a new technology-free dark age, and at the worst, scramble the brains of the military computers, thus unleashing a nuclear catastrophe. Number two, the greenhouse effect was going to boil us all into a messy pulp. Climatologists have been warning a global warming since the 1980s, but we still wait for firm evidence. Number three, Armageddon was going to be unleashed by a vengeful, spiteful God, destroying the lot of us except for the Jehovah's Witnesses, or Moonies, or George W. Bush and selected friends. Number four, E.T.'s relatives are not so cuddly, and have either infiltrated us already, make occasional forays with their anal probes, or are lurking above us in massive stealth spaceships. Either way, they are apparently bent on world conquest, or perhaps they really are intending to build an intergalactic bypass. We wait with bated breath. Number five, gamma rays from the cosmos are just a phenomenon waiting to happen. They've been everywhere else, sapping planets to smithereens. It's only a matter of time, apparently. Number six, a new ice age has been predicted by some as a result of global warming, ironically. Apparently, the melting of the polar ice caps would shut down the Gulf Stream with consequences for humanity, not just for the travel industry. Number seven, the Kuiper Belt is apparently where the comets come from. It's only a matter of time when one is unleashed of sufficient size and direction to do us a lot of damage. Number eight, if the natural world doesn't get us, then you can be assured that mankind will do its very best to self-destruct, with a vast array of options available. The bow and arrow and hand-to-hand fighting of old has been replaced by nuclear, chemical and bacteriological options for mass destruction. Number nine, a mega tsunami is a gigantic wave, one big enough to cross oceans and destroy cities. They can be thousands of feet high, moving at supersonic speeds. The volcanic island of La Palma in the Canary Islands is the hot favourite to produce the big one. That, at the very least, will completely destroy the east coast of the USA. Then there are the meteors, the earthquakes, AIDS, SARS, other plagues, nuclear, bacteriological and chemical accidents, volcanoes, other scientific accidents, producing artificial black holes, nanomachine infestations and quantum vacuum collapse. If one doesn't get you, there are plenty more possibilities waiting in line. Okay, some of these are plainly ridiculous and others have been shown to be flawed as new information comes to light. But it's a long list and growing longer, and surely they can't all be wrong. It only takes one of them to be right, after all. Yet, none of them has been right, has it? Because we're still here, aren't we? Why have they been all wrong so far? We all remember those scruffy individuals lurking with sandwich boards in shopping malls and high streets. The end is nigh, they proclaimed. We still witness others with megaphones or just loud voices proclaiming a similar message, perhaps not with the same apocalyptic certainty, but a message of beginnings and endings nonetheless. But the end hasn't come, has it? Why not? A report published by mistake by US security chiefs on a website in Hawaii mentions 15 doomsday scenarios dreamed up by a government department. The list includes a nuclear bomb in a big city, plague released into an airport washroom and food laced with anthrax. The most costly would be a nuclear bomb driven by a van into a big city and exploded, causing hundreds of billions of dollars worth of devastation. Much is made of biological and chemical attacks, with possibilities of terrorists spraying anthrax with aerosols as they drive from city to city. This is no report from the National Enquirer or the Sun. This came from government experts, and so has credibility. It seems that governments, when they consider possible terrorist actions, are thinking in terms of when and not if. But a big when hasn't arrived yet. Well, not at the time of writing anyway, though I was in London and witnessed the aftermath of the July 7th bombing. Why not? Well, the USA has 5 levels of readiness for war, from DEFCON 5, normal peacetime readiness, to DEFCON 1, if they just fart in our direction, we'll nuke the brrr out of them. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, the US Strategic Air Command was placed on DEFCON 2 for the first time in history. On the 6th of October 1973, Egyptian and Syrian forces launched a surprise attack on Israel. On the 25th of October, US forces went on DEFCON 3 alert status, as possible intervention by the Soviet Union was feared. These were close shaves, and in both cases they moved away from the brink when the danger was over and normality was returned to. Although though we may marvel and sigh in relief that the situation didn't reach a dreadful climax, we can understand why we were taken to the brink. After all, the Russians had provoked both situations, and not to be ready for such an eventuality would have been seen as a great weakness, and war would have been very, very likely. But it hasn't always worked in expected ways. There have been false alarms that could have had horrendous consequences. Probably the best known false alert occurred in the mid-1950s when a radar station mistook a flock of geese for a Soviet bomber attack. There have been at least 4 other less well known incidents in which the superpowers geared up for nuclear annihilation. All were caused by false alarms. On November 9, 1979, at around 9 a.m, the computers at 3 major USA military command centers all indicated the worst nightmare: a massive Soviet nuclear strike aimed at destroying the USA command system and nuclear forces. Senior military officers and the missile defense system were primed for immediate response. The president's doomsday plane was even launched, but the president was not on board for a good reason. It was discovered that the whole episode was generated by a training tape accidentally inserted into the computer running the nation's early warning programs. Disaster was only averted because other defense systems were adamant there were no such missiles, and someone peered out the window and had a good look at the skies. On June 3, 1980, another warning came through that the Soviet Union had launched a nuclear strike. Missiles were primed to retaliate and bomber cruisers scrambled. This time, however, the computer displays didn't produce a consistent picture. In fact, the whole system went haywire, with a random number of missiles being displayed, the number changing constantly. It turned out that a computer chip had gone bad and was responsible for the whole episode. Not so intelligent then, excuse the pun, if indeed you noticed it. It wasn't only the Americans who got it wrong. The Russians could also admit to the odd cock-up. On September 26, 1983, the Soviet early warning satellite system caused a nuclear false alarm. They used a different method to the USA in detecting if hostile missiles were on their way. Their satellites monitored just the edge of the Earth rather than the whole Earth, thus reducing the chance of mistaking naturally occurring phenomena for missile launches. On that fateful day, a trick of the light managed to fool this foolproof system, and the Russians really thought they were under attack. A nuclear war was averted due to the intelligence of the officer on duty, who reasoned that if the Americans wanted to start a nuclear war, they would have done it with far greater missiles than their readings indicated. On January 25, 1995, Norwegian and American scientists launched a rather large rocket to collect scientific data. To Russian technicians, the flight path appeared similar to one that a US missile would take to blind their radar system by detonating a nuclear warhead high in the atmosphere. Boris Yeltsin was poised to press the button for nuclear holocaust, but held back when new intelligence filtered through. Now, these are just the ones we know about, the ones that have been officially sanctioned for public consumption. But what about the others that we don't know about? Surely there are plenty more near misses that are simply too embarrassing or frightening to leak out. In fact, a comprehensive study of nuclear accidents has shown convincing historical evidence that, despite measures taken to prevent them, such accidents are inevitable. But the inevitable hasn't come yet, has it? Why not? To put this all in perspective, there are about 31,000 nuclear warheads in the world, of which around 4,600 are ready for immediate use at a moment's notice. Just these latter missiles represent the firepower of 200,000 Hiroshima bombs. It's no joke. It only takes one random accident of nature, one human mistake. It's just as well in the examples above that fail-safes were placed to put things right. On the other hand, what happens when there are bad intentions? In earlier days, it meant not a jot whether there were rogue nations bent on world domination, or demented dictators driven by twisted philosophies to destroy others who didn't fit within acceptable patterns. Unless they were stopped in their tracks by stronger opposition, the scope of their influence was limited by the distance a horse can gallop, or by the strain a lifetime of battle can put on a human heart, or by natural barriers such as oceans or mountains. Now, Genghis Khan and Alexander the Great may have conquered the world, but only that part of it known to them at the time, which wasn't that much of it, really. Even Hitler, who got further than all before him, found the combination of Russian bear, British bulldog and American eagle just a little too much. Even if he had conquered the world, his forces and those of his allies would have been spread too thinly to maintain a hold on the vast populations that would have come under his control. But the world has changed immeasurably. Messianic ambitions are now matched by technological advancements. Mankind can now actually destroy mankind, and there's a whole armoury of ways of doing it, thanks to scientific endeavours in the field of chemical, bacteriological and nuclear warfare. This was brought home by 9/11, the first event since 1066, known in this country just by its date. It showed that a determined group of individuals motivated by a militaristic faith and funded by a rich, disaffected Saudi were able to strike at the heart of the world's richest nation and set into motion a chain of events that led us into a new age of paranoia and uncertainty. Nowadays, it's not just nations that can bring an end to it all. Technology of mass destruction is just a mouse click away, and if a religious fanatic doesn't push the doomsday button, then there's always the mad, or clumsy, scientist in a germ warfare lab who can unleash a new concoction of death into the world. But it hasn't happened yet, has it? Why not? Four times I've considered the possibility or probability of the world coming to a premature end. Each time I wondered why it hasn't happened. Surely, just by looking at statistics, at probability theory, the odds must be so stacked against us that surely we've been living on borrowed time. Commentators have been telling us ever since 9/11 that a major terrorist campaign on Western nations on a similar scale has been imminent, yet it ain't come yet at the time of writing. I find it hard to believe that it's been because of the skills and expertise of our military intelligence. Even the Israelis, famed for their intelligence network, have allowed occasional suicide bombers through to wreak devastation. It only takes one major terrorist outrage with weapons of mass destruction that are surely never easier than the present to get hold of, to change the world in ways that would make 9/11 seem like a nasty cough at a vicar's tea party. We hear the near misses of the "an off-duty policeman noticed a strange bulge in the coat of a nervous, dark-skinned gentleman lurking outside Paddington Station and immediately recognised him from the mugshot broadcast to his division earlier" variety. And we wonder if this is just PR spin to placate us, spin to show us what a good job the authorities are doing, or spin to show us the need for heightened security, even at the expense of personal liberty. Has a major threat just been averted, or are we being fed a line? One suspects the latter. But if the former is the case, then we marvel at the fact that the world as we know it hasn't been disrupted, and we can continue living our lives fairly normally. But there's no doubt that we have entered a new era of uncertainty. The world is no longer a safe place for those who have lived their whole lives, up to now, cosseted and secure in the knowledge that all the nasty stuff just happens on foreign fields. The terrorists have arrived over here, and whatever the rhetoric from our political leaders, fear has become a part of our lives. For many, this fear can be overwhelming, can stifle any thoughts of hope for the future. How can I bring children up in such a world? Why plan for the future? Eat, drink and be merry, for tomorrow we die. When the first bomb exploded on the London Underground on July the 7th, 2005, I was just a few trains behind. Afterwards, I realised that only by the grace of God go I, in that it could well have been me if the terrorists have targeted Stratford Station, in many ways an obvious target, considering the Olympic 2012 decision made a day earlier. Casualties were kept low due to the bus bomb exploding outside the British Medical Association building and the London Hospital hosting a convention for doctors at that time. Medical staff were plenty, so the situation could have been far worse. Although not quite racked by survivor's guilt, I did wonder when I saw the victim list, drawn from a multicultural mix of the nations, about the randomness of it all. But life is like that. Consider the folk who argued with the driver of the number 30 bus, demanded to be let onto the overcrowded bus. He stubbornly refused and drove off, indifferent to their scowls. Minutes later, that bus was gutted by the bomb, and how those folk would now be counting their blessings and praising the actions of that driver. There can be many such episodes in our life, those what-if moments, when our life is presented with various possibilities, and we spend the rest of it blessing or cursing the path that we took at that time. We can marvel, if we really think about it, that we're living in a country where food is plentiful, with a welfare state to look after us when it is not. We're not at war with our neighbours with realistic risks of death, torture, rape and pillage. We can consider ourselves lucky people that we are where we are. Some call it providence, others thank fate or Dame Fortune or Lady Luck, not realising that they are invoking mysterious forces and minor deities. Of course, there is a flip side. There are unexpected bereavements, sudden illnesses and misfortunes that afflict us all to various degrees. Some people consider themselves blessed, others believe themselves cursed. All of these scenarios suggest possibilities of something other on the outside looking in. Is this just claptrap, or is there really someone or something watching over us? The first terrorist outrage on British soil in many years could have been far worse, far, far worse. Conventional explosives had been used. The effects of chemical or bacteriological agents in the underground system would have been horrendous. So far, at the time of writing, it hasn't happened, and I still ask the question, why not? One possibility occurs, and it develops a theme introduced in the previous chapter. I suggested the possibility that our lives are part of some grand design by a designer or designers who has put us on an earth uniquely designed to support us. If that is so, then perhaps this intelligent designer doesn't want us to screw it all up, doesn't want us to blow ourselves up before we have fulfilled our potential. Perhaps we will screw it all up one day. But if we do, I'd rather that it made sense in the grand scheme of things, rather than it all ending through an apocalyptic plague created by accident by a clumsy scientist in a research lab, or after the whim of a crazed terrorist with the greatest suicide death wish of all.